Technorama episode 629. I'm taking up space in college. Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. Thank you. It's only taking you 629 episodes. And if you're returning, welcome back. We may question certain decisions you've made elsewhere in your life, but we'll go with that. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Joining me right across that virtual table is, of course, Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing great. And that, I'm trying to avoid the cold weather outside, but, well, of course, I can't say anything because T's here, and I'm sure he's got plenty of cold weather up there.
We do.
We do. We even got some of the white stuff. We had snow. No, not that white stuff.
Oh, that white stuff. Oh,
no. That's up in New York, baby. We got some of the white stuff, and it looked like it was going to be pretty nasty. And then we spiked at 40 degrees, and then the sun came out, and I'm like, yeah, that lasted a whole red hot minute.
Right.
It's been chilly. So, my lovely wife, Pip, and my lovely, daughter, Sunny, as she likes to call herself online. We've been hunkering down, and I was doing some research for a new trilogy I've started. And we just finished watching Kiki's Delivery Service. We're doing this whole Studio Ghibli watch on Sunday nights. And man, that was, if you want something wholesome to take away the sting of 2020, just watch Kiki's Delivery Service. It's darling.
You post that image of it, anime, right?
Yep.
Well, T, for those who might have missed it, give them a quick introduction.
See that cover behind Chuck Tomasi? Yeah, we wrote that together, and the fourth edition has already paid out. What?
I'm the author.
Like mad money.
Yeah, pretty
much. Jim Cramer. It's paid out.
It's paid out, and now everybody's swimming in roses. Let's go. All right. So just real quick rundown. I'm the author of Podcasting for Dummies. I'm also the author of Discord for Dummies. And I'm also author of this, Twitch for Dummies. But some of you also may also know me in geek circles as one of the two authors behind not just Podcasting for Dummies, but this series right here. This is the award-winning Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences steampunk series. And this is the first in the series, Phoenix Rising. Thank you very much. Thank you for the plug. That's what I do. So I'm a content creator of all kinds, podcasts, streaming, books. Yeah, I mean, I was a content creator for actually all three of us were content creators before content creation was even a thing. It went from what we were once called new media, then we were called
podcasters, streaming new media,
media,
and then all kind of just blends together.
We never said netcast. No. I think in a drunken stupor at one of these events, Craig said netcasting, and then I
let
kicked
me tell you something. I'll never use netcast.
And Leo goes, that's good. I'm going to use that.
that's when I punched Craig in the mommy daddy box so hard he was singing soprano for a week. But these are all times we try to forget.
Oh, boy. Also, you are the author of one of my favorite books,
Podcasting for Dummies.
Billy Bob Battings.
Oh, the Case of the Singing Sword, Billy Bob Battings. Yeah. Pour one out for Billy. Well, then you are going to love. Craig, what I'm cooking up right now. I'm actually doing, no, track with me with these boys. I'm doing this thing now called writing streams. I did not think that me at a desk writing would make for good content, and people are eating it up. I mean, they love looking how.
Oh, wait a minute. It's not what you're making, it's that you're making it. And you're watching you stream.
They're watching me stream, and I've got like chill music playing in the background, and I'll talk about maybe a decision I'm making. I'm not letting people write over my shoulder. It's not that, but I explain and I also take questions like, how do you get published? Where do I start? You know, do you have any advice for a fledgling writer? But then I'll also talk about like, well, what's the inspiration behind the book? Why did you choose this? I'll even ask, so what's a good word for this, you know, stuff like that. Writing becomes an interactive, activity, if you will. And I've been having a ball with this. So the new series I'm working on, it's, um,
It's basically the Fear City trilogy. There's going to be three books in there, Fear City, New York, Fear City, Las Vegas, and Fear City, D.C. And I got the inspiration from this from a docuseries on Netflix called Fear City, New York versus the Mob. And
we're going to talk about that later. So don't let that.
I'm not going to give away too much, but basically it's the takedown of the mob. But I've worked in elves and orcs.
Okay.
And people go, oh, so it's going to be like Shadowrun. It's like, not quite. It's you find out how elves and orcs even get into this universe through Fear City, Las Vegas. And then it all comes to a head in Fear City, D.C. And I've been having a blast writing this. I've had to go back and, but now instead of researching like Capone and Nitty and all those old school gangsters, I'm now getting into the Columbo family, the Gambinos, the Caseys, and you know, working a little Gotti in there. I mean, oh, I'm having a ball with this.
Basically, you're crowdsourcing the book, but you're not giving any of these other people any money.
Do what?
You're crowdsourcing the book, but they don't get any money.
Fewer NDA.
What's another word for I like that? I'm going to use that, but not pay you anything.
Well, no, I make it clear. I'm like, look, let's get something clear. If I'm going to use one of your ideas, if you offer up any ideas, they're up for grabs. You know, you got to kind of put that up front if you're going to do that. But
by that's viewing this stream, you are agreeing to the following conditions.
There's a footnote in the book on the credits page. Special help by the internet.
The interwebs. Yeah. But I mean, but
Tim 0006.
Yeah. Mama Hot Socks 8469. I mean, you know, but here's the thing. If you're gonna do something like that as a writer, the first thing I would say is one. It's a lot of fun because it does make the solitary feel of when you're working on a book less solitary, but you got to make sure that you let people know straight off the bat. No, I'm not taking that idea because I'm not writing this by committee. This is my book. I've made this decision. Here's why. And if you don't like it, then you need to go and give yourself a time out because I'm not dealing with that.
Sounds a lot like live coding happy hour.
Are you holding back some of your story elements so now everybody doesn't realize exactly what you're writing or maybe where it's going, I should say?
No. I'm telling people like, okay, I think this is going to be dealt with at the beginning, you know, later on. This is going to be here. This is going to, you know, I'm letting people know what's happening.
Andy Weir did that sort of, not with the stream, but writing The Martian, you know, he was putting it on his website. So,
right. And there's no real difference. In fact, I've had a lot of people come in and go, it's great seeing how this story is evolving. Cause they start, you know, you start where you start with the series. And then as I've been getting deeper into the book, people are like, oh, that's a great direction to go to. I really like that. Or they'll go, oh, that's, why did you choose to do it that way? And again, it becomes a little more interactive. And I was very hesitant doing this cause I went to another writer stream and I was throwing out ideas and they were very receptive to them. And then I thought to myself, I'm doing this guy a disservice. We're writing this book by committee. And I don't think that's the way we should be doing this. So I stopped going to that writer stream, unfortunately. But then I said, I don't think I'm going to do this. And then when NaNoWriMo came around, I thought, oh, this would be fun. Let's give it a try. See what
it's
happens.
It's a good time to try it if you're going to write a book, you know,
and,
like that.
I had no idea. I had no idea that this would be a thing. And Pip is the thing is we're now saying that it's another. We call the streams another chill writing stream powered by the shared desk. So we're getting in a little promotion for the shared desk, right. And then Pip joins me on the other side, and then people are asking Pip questions. She's asking me. You know, they see the two of us brainstorm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really been a blast.
You got to be rolling in that Twitch dough. Let me tell you.
What do you mean? No. I ain't no Dr. Lupo or Ninja just yet. Not yet. Working on it.
All right. Let's move on to feedback.
By the way, when you said Ninja, my first thought was to ask a Ninja.
I was thinking about the thing that chops up the ice for my margarita.
Yeah. Okay. Big Step asks, what do you do when you start swimming? Well, let me tell you, Craig, it's an anonymous thing to do.
That's right.
I miss that guy, man.
I know.
He was a legend.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Mailman, mailman, mail today. Reach right in and pull one out. Boom.
those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy.
Mailman. Mail today.
Careful where you poke that finger, Craig. You don't know where it's been.
Yeah.
God damn it, Craig. All right, our question of the week last week was, what movie quotes do you live by?
Oh, my God, that's a good one.
All right, I will start with the Technorama page because they're usually short and sweet, but jump right into your own responses. We'll go in rotation. So I got one from Stefan Olofsson. That is an awesome name if I ever heard one, by the way.
No kidding, yeah. That sounds like a bad guy in a movie.
He says, improvise, adapt, overcome, from Heartbreak Ridge. What have you got, Mr. Craig?
Philip Glover, a guy I went to sky school with. Charlie, don't surf.
Apocalypse Now, Robert Duvall.
That's right.
I remember that.
It took me a minute. At first, I went, huh? And then, I got it.
Charlie, don't surf! Yeah. Oh, my God, he was brilliant in that.
All right, I've got one from email that came in from Drew. He's watching on YouTube right now. Unfortunately, he wrote it all in whatever language he speaks over there in India. But he did do an English translation, fortunately for me. It says, I want to fly, I want to run, I even want to fall. I just don't want to stop. I don't know where that's from, but that's kind of a cool phrase.
That's a good one. So I actually sent a clip, so I don't know if you can play it and you can get the audio on it there.
I can, but we'll probably get flagged for copyright infringement.
Ah, dang it.
But it's Bluto's speech in Animal House when he's...
Was it over? Were the Germans bomb Pearl Harbor?
Germans?
Forget it, man. He's rolling.
Hey, you know, I play that every night when I was DJing at the end of the night. When everybody's coming to go home, I play that.
I particularly like the phrase. It says where the nerd speaks up. He goes, oh, what the you supposed to do, you moron?
Yeah. You moron. That's right.
It's like that guy's big moment.
That was
he just sells it. He just because he's blinking real fast. He's got these kind of glasses. What the hell supposed to do, you moron? And I'm like, wow, man.
All right, Craig, you got another one?
My old buddy, CJ Lamb, he says, you're killing me, Smalls. The classic.
That's a classic. It's a classic.
The Sandlot. Yep.
T, you have any more?
Oh, where to begin? Heading captain, second star to the right. Spin on until morning.
Star Trek
or better yet. You know what? Quick tangent. This is why I hated Star Trek Into Darkness so much. As talented actors as Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto are, they are not Shatner and Nimoy.
True.
No. In the moment when you see him do the Vulcan high five, and then he says "Live long and prosper," you feel every moment of that. Especially when you see Shatner touch the glass, I'm like, that's a heartbreaker, man. That's a heartbreaker. And so you know.
You hated Star Trek into Darkness because of that?
I hated Star Trek. No, okay. because the entire movie was just like, oh, so we're going to rehash Star Trek 2? Look, Abrams, you're a good director, but you're not that good of a director. Now these are quotes for life. These aren't just favorite quotes, but that's a great quote. Live long and prosper. But another great quote, probably the best thing to come out of Star Trek 5, again, from the Shat, why does God
starship? I know. Yeah.
I mean, that was, I wish I could say that was worth it to sit through the movie for that, but it's still a great line. Why does God need a starship? You know, I mean.
That's right. Yeah, that is a good one. That's certainly memorable for sure.
Now, if you want one for life, though, a great one from the original Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's not the years, honey.
Yeah.
It's the mileage.
The mileage, that's right. I got one for you.
Yeah.
Badges? We don't need no stinking badges.
You know how long it takes to get to that line in that movie?
You know what? Because you got to sit through all the racist stuff at the beginning, and then you got to wait for, hey, where the white women? Oh, wait, you're talking about the original. You're not talking about Blazing Saddles, are you?
No.
That's where my mind went.
Yeah, so, you know, no. I was talking about Scarface.
Or even badgers? We don't need no stinking badgers.
Jeez, UHF. Good God.
I'm working my way through that slowly but surely, about 15 UHF? Minutes a week. Yeah. I bought it on Google Play, and just like it stays on my Google Play. It's like, you know,
wait a minute. You're having trouble getting through it?
No, I've gotten through it before. I'm just like, I walked out on that thing.
I walked out on UHF.
Wow.
I hate to say it. It was so, I'm out.
Well, I'm glad we found a way to get rid of Craig.
Wait, what, you were looking?
We have exploited his weakness.
Weird Al is my
weakness. My friend Sasha says, when Harry met Sally, I'll have what she's having.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a classic.
Another good one is just one of those moments where you feel it in the theater. Miss McLean, a pleasure to meet your acquaintance. Die Hard still remains like one of the perfect Christmas movies ever made.
Yeah.
And yes, you can at me. Yes, you can fight me. Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
I'm with you. Hey, it's in our Christmas rotation. Yeah, for sure. It's a Christmas movie.
It's as much a Christmas movie as my favorite things is a Christmas song from The Sound of Music. Right? I don't get that either. Yeah.
I don't get that.
Or the Nutcracker, is Christmas music. Well,
no wait. The Nutcracker is Christmas. That is a Christmas story. That is a true to life Christmas story.
It always comes out at Christmas, though. The Nutcracker really isn't. Yeah, well, okay.
Go ahead.
One more.
Here's one more from Mark McCoy. Do or do not. There is no try.
Oh, Karate Kid.
Now. Right.
Like that great line that Yoda had. That Yoda had in Empire Strikes Back. Remember, Skywalker, wax on, wax off.
Man, those were great.
Squash just like grape.
Actually, you know what was funny is when Yoda delivered that line, you know, it was like, ooh, that's deep. He just told Luke off, pretty much laid it down. That was awesome. That was a good moment.
All right, we'll wrap that up and come back with another one at the end of the show for you to consider for next week. I think we're going to need a bigger boat. Okay, get your D20 out, gentlemen, and roll them.
All right.
Oh, man.
Hey.
I think I'm going to need a new D20. I got a four.
I got a 15.
17.
Okay.
Ooh.
Craig T. Chuck.
I'm showing the wrong number. 17.
Greg T. I got Chuck, a 15. We're going around clockwise.
Wait, what number did you get, Chuck? 4? Oh, I start then.
Yes, you start. We're starting.
Okay.
Right, so there. I take it I'm going second.
Okay, let me roll the music, and I will bring you in. You can read the first bullet item, all right?
All right. Here we go.
On this day in history for February 10th, 2021, this is the 41st day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 324 days remaining in 2021.
It was on this date in 1502 that Vasco da Gama set sail, from Lisbon, Portugal, on his second voyage to India.
It was assailed in Lisbon.
I was going to say, it was assailed in Lisbon. At least it wasn't Singapore.
Something about being assailed by lesbians. I'm not sure what that was.
Wow, I got to follow that up. Great. Thanks, Tomasi. There was also this date in 1906 that the HMS Dreadnought, the first of a revolutionary new breed of battleships, was christened.
I just finished watching that episode of Voyager with the Dreadnought. Yep. They can fix anything. It was the same date in 1923. Texas Tech University was founded as Texas Technological College in Lubbock, Texas.
A.K.A. TTC.
Not TTU.
Yeah.
How about THC?
81 years ago today, cartoon characters Tom and Jerry made their debut with Puss Gets the Boot.
Wow.
Actually, they're going to have another movie coming out.
They don't look a day over 80.
No. Nope. On February 10th, 1962, captured American U-2 spy plane Gary Powers was exchanged for a captive Soviet spy, Rudolf Abel, and went on to lead an amazing alternative rock band, also by the name of U-2. I love his vocals on Sunday Bloody Sunday. Gary Powers can rock it out.
Name of love. Okay. Also on February 10th, 1996, IBM supercomputer Deep Blue defeated Garry Kasparov in the chess game for the first time.
And that same date in 2009, the communication satellite Iridium 3
33
and Cosmos 2251 collided in orbit, destroying both.
Happy birthday goes
That's on. That's a one big boom.
Now there's debris flying everywhere. Happy birthday goes out of this day to French physicist and engineer Claude-Louis Navier, born on this date in 1785.
And Irish astronomer and author Agnes Mary Clerk was born 179 years ago today.
And she's still looking for her magic lucky charms because they're magically delicious. Hello, diddly die, piddly pool.
Green stars. No, blue stars. No, what? Do we even have stars anymore? Aye.
Yeah.
American chemist and academic Ira Remsen. That sounds good. Born on this date in 1846. Looking good, Ira. Looking good.
Edith Clark, the American electrical engineer, was born on the same date in 1883. An electrical engineer in 1883. Did they have electricity back then?
Edith would say something about it. I'm sure she would.
All right.
Yeah. So born February 10th, 1893. American actor, singer, pianist, Jimmy Durante.
I never played the piano.
The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
Speaking of Christmas.
American actor Lon Chaney Jr., born on this date in 1906. But man, I tell you what, about Lon Chaney, they couldn't figure out what that kid looked like. He kept changing his face. Every time. He just changes face every time.
Also born that same date in 1930, American actor and producer Robert Wagner.
Beautiful. And guess what? He knows how to swim. Unfortunately, like his wife, Natalie, she floats like wood.
Bring me $1 billion, number two.
$1 million, is it?
Sir. You got it. Hey.
Sir. Also turning 84 today is American singer-songwriter and pianist Roberta Flack.
Robert A. Flack.
Robert A. Flack.
That's right.
American media executive Bob Iger, born on this date in 1951.
American TV personality, pundit, and we referenced him earlier. If you were watching the live stream, I think it was before that. Mr. Jerry Kramer. No. Yeah. Jim Kramer. Boom! Yeah. Booyah!
And also turning 64 today is American astrophysicist and academic Catherine Fries.
Also born on the same date. Do you know the icy cold space Spotman? No, sorry. Just Fries. Sorry. Also born on the same date in 1960, American biologist, computer programmer, academic, and probably way smarter than three of us combined, Jim Kent.
American actress, director, and producer Laura Dern was born in the state in 1967.
And last but not least, also turning 53 today is American engineer and astronaut Garrett Riesman.
Listener birthdays this week. We've got Drace on the 10th. That's Sherry from North Dakota. Douglas E. Welch of Career Opportunities Podcast on the 14th, along with Andrew from Illinois on the 14th. And Philip from Australia. Man, there's Philip a name we Australia. Haven't heard from in a wow. long, long time.
Wow.
His birthday's wow. on the 15th. Beautiful. I can't believe we wasted all that time and we still got music to spare. I thought for
just
sure.
Just fade us out, baby. Just fade us out.
That's the way it was on this day in history for February 10th, 2021. And if you want to get your name on the birthday list, let me bring back this. Turn that off. Yep, okay, got that. And I believe I am not doing that on purpose. Stop already.
Can have your attention, please.
We have a fire in engineering. We have a fire in engineering. Please.
I think I need to
proceed to the nearest exit. Put on your life jackets and please remain calm, you daft bastards.
I think I need to quit the Stream Deck app or something.
Have you tried turning off and turning it on again?
Okay, well, that was fun.
Can I interest you in a book, Tomasi? It's called Twitch for Dummies. It'll help you navigate through problems like this.
Oh, no, great. Here come the plugs. All right, all I was trying to do was turn the title.
Look, a key got stuck.
No, the Stream Deck is
Oh, it's even faster
clogged.
Now.
Yeah, because
stop touching
I must have upgraded. Hey, I got nothing for that. All right, well, I'm going to have to look at my Stream Deck configuration, apparently.
Every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings. And when they get stuck on Stream
about
Deck,
a thousand of them
it brings
right
the podcast to a close.
The angels just got beat with the angel wing stick.
The desk where they hand the angel wings over, they're like,
Stop already. All I was
asking. Hey, I got a question for you guys.
Chat, we have been at this for 15 years. Can you believe that?
Well oiled machine. Nothing like it in
like
the
butter.
Nothing like
professional. Look it up in a book.
Well, thankfully, these aren't run from the Stream Deck. Hey, we're going to try.
I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
All right. So I read the name Catherine Freeze, and it reminded me that one day Harrison came downstairs. He got up from bed and came downstairs, and he had the shirt on, and it says Freeze College, home of the Fighting Badgers or something like that, or Beavers. And I was like, what's Freeze College? I'd never seen this shirt before. We didn't give it to him. I don't know where it came from. He's like, I don't know. I'm like, what do you mean? He didn't even know where it came from. So wow. I looked online for, I took a picture of it and was searched for the picture. I don't think it's a real college. Is it like from a movie or something, or
maybe?
I guess so. I don't recognize the Freeze College. Don't know what to tell you there, bud.
Well, the bigger mystery was he got this shirt, but nobody knew where it came from.
It might have been like one of those things where I know sometimes we have had house guests and sometimes they leave their garments behind.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, I've had to explain, no, those aren't mine. And, you know, and I'm just going to leave
pink underwear.
That. I'm just going to leave it at that. I'm just going to stop right there.
Pip,
right.
I don't wear leopard skin.
You use the fake stuff.
I know Lisa got a t-shirt in a parade. They were like throwing t-shirts out, and it was for a local bar in the Upper Peninsula. It was like, so here's this fourth grade girl going to school with a t-shirt that says Full Moon Bar.
Oh, man.
And
oh,
nobody ever said anything. I'm like, what? But yet they'll, you know. Some of the that was when we lived in Wisconsin, so it was probably okay
was
to wear
say,
bar t-shirts.
Say,
you know what they say about Wisconsin: more bars, more places.
I guess there you go.
All right, we have some sad news.
Bad news, everyone.
In the news segment, we are all saddened by the loss of legendary actor Christopher Plummer.
Yeah,
and legend.
I will best remember him, of course, as General Chang from Star Trek VI, but he's had a lot of other roles.
The Shakespeare quoting Klingon.
Craig, would you like to read the news story?
Hey, me?
Yeah, you.
I didn't hear you say my name. I'm sorry. Okay. So today, well, February 5th, legendary actor Christopher Plummer passed away at 91. According to the reports, the Oscar, Tony, and Emmy winner died peacefully today in his home in Connecticut. In addition to his many roles on seven decades of Star Trek fans remember Plummer as General Chang, as we were just mentioning, in the 1991 Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. There's a video on here, and there's different accolades, there's some videos with him and William Shatner. So go check out our article. But everybody remembers him as General Chang because I thought he did a great job. That's one of my favorite Star Trek movies.
Yeah. It was directed by Nicholas Meyer, who is the same guy that directed Star Trek II.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I remember sitting in the theater when he shows up is the first thing I noticed about General Chang was the eye patch that was bolted into his head.
And
it was bolted into his head.
One of the things they said, there was a small detail that wasn't actually seen on camera, but each one of those little things, that those bolts, had the Klingon insignia on it.
Oh, wow.
On the head of each.
Yeah. Of course they did. So here's the thing.
It's field surgery to put that, you know, the Klingons.
or probably do it yourself.
Yeah, I got the eye patch ever.
But that just showed you what a badass he was in that. And he was like, you know, that was 91. So he was pushing, he was like in his 60s, and he got on all that prosthetic makeup and he still rocked it because he was Christopher effing Plummer. And there's a great little, not only does Christopher Plummer hold the honor of being the very first Klingon on screen to quote Shakespeare in its proper Klingonese. This was a credit to him as an actor, and this is the actor nerd in me speaking up. When he said "Dach, der Bach, everybody in that theater knew exactly what he was quoting. And
oh yeah.
And even better, he asked, so what is to be or not to be in Klingon? Because I'd heard it was either Nicholas Meyer's idea or Plummer's idea, or they worked together to come to that. And they went to the linguist and they said, how would you say it? And the guy was like, oh crap, I don't know, because we don't have a B. There is no B in the language. So they had to go into the language, figure it out, and go, okay, this is what it is. And if it hadn't been for quoting Hamlet, there would not be that to be, yeah, actually in the Klingon, included in the Klingon language.
That's funny.
Now here's another thing. A lot of people, their first memory of Christopher Plummer.
I know where you're going with this. I know where you're going with this.
It's Sound of Music. Mine is one of the first PG-13 movies ever created.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called Dreamscape.
Oh yeah.
And Christopher Plummer was the big bad. And he scared the hell out of me as a kid.
Oh yeah.
I love Dreamscape.
I forgot about that. I hadn't seen that in a long time.
It was interesting because he didn't really care for the Captain Von Trapp character from Sound of Music.
Right.
He thought it was one-dimensional and very flat, and it wasn't until much, much later, decades later, that he finally appreciated that character in that movie.
Right. Right. So, did you guys see him? I think it was his final film. Did you guys see him in Knives Out?
No.
Yes.
I love Knives Out.
Chuck, I'm telling you right now, you need to watch Knives Out. He hadn't lost a beat. The guy is 90 and he hadn't lost a friggin' beat. The man was a living freaking legend.
He had one of those voices that could get your attention.
Mm-hmm. I actually heard, when I was single and in my wilder youth, I dated another theater nerd. She actually had a vinyl album of Christopher Plummer as Cyrano de Bergerac in a musical version of Cyrano de Bergerac.
Hmm.
And I was like, holy Hannah, does he got some range? And everyone knows him as Von Trapp, like you said, from Sound of Music. Von Trapp doesn't sing as much. It's more about Julie Andrews and the kids.
Yeah.
But in this one, he is doing a musical Cyrano de Bergerac, and he is nailing it. And it's just, I mean, the guy was, it broke my heart. But I mean, 91, as Pip would say, that's a good wicket.
Craig, you were mentioning his voice. He's got one of those voices you could listen to him recite just about anything. You know,
yeah. Tell the me. The EULA on your software package.
Tell me, Mr. Skip.
If they had used Christopher Plummer's voice for the terms of service of any of these social media platforms, everybody would know what their terms of service are, because it'd be like,
I'm backing out.
Yeah.
I could just see him working at Subway. You know, would you like tomatoes with that? Yes.
You can have it your way at Burger King.
Mr. Step.
Yeah.
What is your phone number?
Mr. Tomasi, would you mind giving me the password for all your sensitive accounts? I will take good care of it. I'm Christopher Plummer. Thank you.
I'm not sure where we came up with the British accent.
For a minute, I thought there was two of you.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's... Well, Christopher Plummer was one of those... Christopher Plummer was one of those old school actors that, even though he was American, he still had that British lilt to things. No, wait, no, he was British. Wasn't he British?
I don't think so.
Oh, well, whatever the case. I only assume that he's British because there was another movie. It was, so Pip and I were going on this. We were on this kick where we were watching a terrific YouTube series called History Buffs.
He's born in Canada.
Okay, there you go. Okay. There you go.
Yeah, Canada, that's close, sort of like to British, like, close to
British.
Close to
British light. Light.
Yeah.
It's British light.
It's British light. Anyway, so anyway, it was like, so Christopher Plummer was in this movie that we actually had to hunt down to find it. But History Buffs, by the way, if you're ever curious about history, about how accurate the history is in film, take a look at the YouTube channel History Buffs. It's quite a good show. And one of the movies they talk about is a movie called Waterloo. And in this historian's opinion, it is the most historically accurate film ever shot. And Christopher Plummer plays Wellington. He plays the guy that basically beats that beats Napoleon at Waterloo.
Yep.
And he was terrific in it, but he was also extremely British. At one point he says, you know, like an explosion happens and a guy says, the guy turns towards Christopher Plummer and goes, I believe my leg has been blown off. And Plummer goes, oh dear, are you going to be all right? And he said, frightfully, no. And then the guy passes out. No. I'm like, wow, that's the most British death scene I think I've ever seen.
Yeah. I shall go now.
Yeah.
All right. We're very sorry to see him go, but we also need to go on to the next story. And Mr. Morris, this one is for you in the Facts and Strange Stories section. I believe you put this in here.
I did. I did. New Zealand cactus smuggler straps plants to her body.
Is that a cactus in your pocket or are you just...
Are you measling me or what?
Go ahead. Frisk away. Frisk away.
She was just looking for a quick poke. Biosecurity officials in New Zealand said a woman caught attempting to smuggle more than 1,000. Can I say that number again? 1,000 succulents and endangered cacti in the tenth of the country was sentenced to 100 hours of community service.
I was going to make a joke about succulents, but there you go.
The Ministry for Primary Industry says Wenqing Lee, 38, of Auckland, was accused of attempting to smuggle cacti and succulents into New Zealand from China on two separate occasions.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, this lady's got a severe kink because she didn't just strap cacti to herself once. It was twice. So she was kind of digging it.
Or it was digging her.
Or they were just digging each other. The ministry said Lee returned to Auckland International Airport from a China trip in March 2019 with 947 plants concealed in stockings and strapped to her body. She fled to the bathroom where she attracted the attention of a police dog and attempted to dispose of the items, which included 8 endangered and threatened species and was worth an estimated $7,200. Authority recovered a large amount of plant materials from the bathroom. The ministry said Lee returned again from China in April 2019 with 142 seeds hidden inside iPad covers, as well as more than 200 garden ornaments and plant pots, which were in turn carrying at least one snail and pieces of tree fern stem.
Snail.
And no, snails aren't bad news, Craig. Don't underestimate those things. Snails and slugs, they've decimated countries.
She was carrying it. That's the
she was carrying it.
I call it Herman.
Officials say Lee, who deals in cacti and other plants on website Trade Me, put New Zealand's biosecurity at risk by bringing the non-native and potentially invasive plants into the country. Lee was sentenced to 100 hours of community service and 12 months of intense supervision. And when I turned to Pip and said, so what have you got to say for yourself, Kiwi? She was like, Auckland. I wouldn't expect anything less. That's what she said. Literally, that's what she said. My wife is from Wellington, everybody. So that kind of puts it in perspective there.
All right, I'm going to skip ahead. We've got some other articles in here, but I want to make sure that we've got enough room in the show for our media content that we've got coming up. We have, of course, all of our Patreon people that have contributed to the show. Thank you very much. I'm going to forego mentioning all of your names. It's the same 27 that were in the last show, so just replay that part. Thank you to all of you.
Go back and listen at 21 minutes. And
yeah, something like that. If you do want to be a Patreon person, you can do so over at patreon.com/technoramapodcast. Very much appreciated. For as little as $1 a show, you can help keep this insanity running. And apparently I've got to fix my Stream Deck now. So we don't know what we're in for there. It could be as simple as a reboot. I don't know yet. We're not going to do that in the middle of the show. But for now, I'm doing it the old-fashioned way by clicking icons.
You need to do a podcast. And only you, for just $1 a month. Can someone play Sarah McLachlan in the background as I say this? Just $1 a month.
I'll do the Sally Struthers. Won't you please help out? There's a starving Stream Deck
is their first time listening to us. I don't think this.
We're not selling it here. All right. We're going to go on to the segment we call Pass Me the Remote.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like every time I pass the remote over to Pip. It just
like the 6 o'clock news is about to start or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It's like, just hand it to me already.
Did you grab?
Right. T, where would you like to begin?
Well, since I mentioned it earlier, and since I was watching it earlier, Fear City, New York versus the Mob.
I like this.
This is the inspiration from my latest work. And basically it's a 3-part docuseries. It's available on Netflix. So if you got Netflix, it's easy to find. And what's fascinating about it is it's about the takedown of the mob. Mm-hmm. And if you are, but I will give you a fair warning. It's the mob. So if you got a problem with the F-bomb, you're not going to want to watch this.
Yeah, a little.
The opening, I'm going to edit it for everybody here, is that you hear.
They're playing a recording. Like a
phone ringing.
Yeah.
And it's a recording, and it goes, hello? Hey, Jimmy, is that perfect there? Yeah. Put him on the effing phone.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. He goes, yeah, Johnny, listen to me. I got something to tell you. If you ain't got that effing 200 in my hands tomorrow, I'm going to break every bone in your mother effing body. I swear to my kids.
I swear to my kids. I love that.
It's a little punch at the end. He goes, if I don't have that effing 200 in my effing hands tomorrow, I'm going to break every bone in your effing body. I swear to my kids. It's like,
jeez. I love that. I swear to my kids.
And it was that line that gave me the inspiration to start working on this urban fantasy. But what's great about Fear City is you hear the tapes. You hear the tapes of the discussions of these people, and you realize just what effing monsters these guys were.
Yeah.
And it basically explains the RICO Act and how these tapes were instrumental in the RICO Act and bringing down the mob. And you realize just how much money these guys were pulling down. It was crazy pants.
And they thought they were untouchable. But I thought it was also fascinating watching the evolution of the way that the law enforcement had to like invent ways to get in there and be creative.
Yes.
I really felt for that guy that had to keep posing as a cable repairman or an electrician. He's like
special
going
ops
into the,
guy. Yeah.
He's going special. Into these really dangerous situations to plant a bug.
Hang on a minute. So these are all the notes that I was taking just today.
Oh my gosh.
Episode one. All right.
Pages and pages.
Oh man, pages on pages. And one, first off, the RICO Act, which is what they used to take down the mob, it had been on the law books for a decade.
Remind me what it stands for. It's racketeering.
Hang on. I got that down here too. Yeah, okay. Just to make sure I got it.
Was it named after one of the guys named Rico?
It was not.
No, they mentioned it in Ozark too, which we've talked about on this show.
The RICO Act stands for Racketeer, Influence, and Corrupt Organizations Act. It was written in 1970 by Professor G. Robert Blakey. It was passed as law for 10 years. The FBI didn't know how to use it. They did not know how to use it. So Cornell University offered a training course in March of 79. Yep. It was a week-long training course. And this was a direct quote. Before RICO, the FBI would arrest mob soldiers for crimes, but there was no way of tying foot soldiers to anyone above them.
Yep.
And it was Professor Bob Blakey that basically said, what you got to do is take out the organization. And to take out the organization, unless you focus on the organization by defining these people as bosses and members of this organization, they're all now joined together. So instead of saying, okay, we're going to arrest these guys for smaller crimes, if you can prove that these guys were doing smaller crimes and that these smaller crimes were tied in to the people above them, if you could connect the dots all the way up to the boss, you don't just take down the people who are committing crimes. You take down everybody and anybody involved. And that's what the RICO Act was. And in July 1980, they put together this for the first time in the FBI's history in 1980. They said, oh, we're going to actually have a plan now on dealing with organized crime. I mean, everybody thinks, and that's the thing that, you know, again, going back to Billy Battings, everybody thinks that the FBI had their stuff together because of, you know, Capone and the Untouchables. No, that wasn't even the FBI. That was the Treasury Department.
Yep.
That's true.
The revenue.
And the thing was, Al Capone was never charged for a murder. They brought him in on tax evasion.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Tax evasion.
I remember it was a regular thing on the evening news when I was younger to see regular stories about, you know, this crime boss or you know, somebody was shot down in a Gambino hit it was regular stuff. I mean, this was the news.
Yeah. So Fear City is about basically the first part is about the about them actually about how the mob handled, you know, some of the operations they did. And And then the second part is basically how the what happens when they figure out, oh crap, we've been bugged. And you hear about some of the wacky stories that these guys did to put bugs in, take bugs out. The guy you were talking about was Joe Cantamessa, who is the who is head of special ops for the FBI. They were called Black Bag Men. They had a skill set for planting concealed microphones or getting through locked doors. And the way Cantamessa says it, most people don't operate in a covert world. They don't blend. The most successful agents fit sort of my profile. Maybe I was a bad kid growing up. Maybe I can learn how to hide and learn how to blend and so on and so forth. And that was the prerequisite for becoming a black bag man. I mean, the
names that come up with these things. Yeah.
And they're talking to old mob. They're talking about the guys who were once connected, old mobsters. Yeah. I mean, it's a really in-depth look at how they were on top of the world. Then when the FBI finally figured out the RICO Act, suddenly they were like, what is this? And before, by the time they figured out what the RICO Act was, they were done.
It sounds funny thinking when you said that they had to go to a training course, a week long training course. You do that for software or something like exactly. that, not to learn how to use it.
What's really heartbreaking though about Fear City, New York versus the mob is one of the people they talk to is Rudy Giuliani. And he is coherent. He is articulate. Oh. And I'm like, what happened to you, Rudy?
What the hell happened? Yeah, that segment really made his career.
Yeah. And his hair wasn't bleeding. I mean, you know, he wasn't giving the interview at the Four Seasons landscaping parking lot.
That was classic, by the way.
My God. I'm like, what happened to you, Rudy? What happened? I just wanted to be able to take that Rudy and shake him and go, please be this Rudy all the time. Because it was hard to. Yeah. But anyway,
it was that Borat movie he did.
It must have been. But that's Fear City. That's Fear City, New York City versus the mob. It's on Netflix and it's terrific. And if you got HBO Max, that's one of the two streaming services that Pip and I've been really impressed with. Mm-hmm. We have Disney Plus and we absolutely love Disney Plus, but we also have HBO Max. And they have a documentary series in there called The Lady in the Dale.
Yeah, I saw the title card for that, but I didn't.
Yeah. So The Lady in the Dale. The reason I bring this one up is that they're doing this very interesting way of telling this documentary, and I think it's because this is such a weird story. And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you guys have talked about the Dale at least once on this show, and if you haven't, shame on you, because I'm old enough to remember when this car was rolled out on The Price is Right. I remember when I saw it, I thought that is so cool. Basically, this woman comes out of nowhere and says, hey, I've got a three-wheeled car and it can get 70 miles to the gallon. And she was toting this as the car of the future. And people were losing their minds over it because this was at the height of the gas crisis, the energy crisis of the late 70s, of the 70s, let's just say the 70s. And American cars just had people bent over a barrel because they were getting anywhere from 10 to 25.
It was a big scam that was all they had was really like a plywood mock-up.
They had the mock-up, which they took to the trade shows. Yeah. But they didn't have a working one. And the working one they did have, unfortunately, wasn't as stable as the designer from NASA.
I remember that now.
Yeah, thought it was.
The theory is it gets really good mileage because three wheels take less fuel than four.
Friction.
That's why motorcycles get really good mileage.
And the other thing too is that it was really super streamlined. I mean, it did look like something out of a science fiction novel from the 70s.
It wasn't there like a didn't they make a certain amount of them, like 30 or it was like
no. They never no, made any no, of them. No, they this, did not make okay. any of them.
This was the precursor to Theranos.
Yeah. The thing about this story that is so crazy is they discover during their investigation of this woman who seemed to literally come out of nowhere, somebody wound up getting her fingerprints. They ran a check. They found out that she was once upon a time a he, and that he was transgender.
Mm-hmm.
So now you got this transgender angle in there. And then they found out about his past was an absolute horror show. This guy was a professional con man. And so when he reinvents himself as a she, people are like, you know, people knew that she was scamming people with this Dale, but she said, I want to be a trans. I want to be a trendsetter. I want to break barriers as a transgender individual. And they said this in the documentary, and they said, yeah, but you're doing a lot of illegal stuff here. Don't you think that's going to taint your legacy? And she's like, oh, that won't matter. And she ripped off thousands of people, mm-hmm. of thousands of dollars. Hmm. And but here's the thing that's funny about The Lady and Dale as a documentary series. This is such a crazy story, but it's the way they're telling it. Unlike Fear City, where they're talking to people in present day, and you hear that they have some reenactments that are out of focus, so you can't tell if that's the real person or the person talking. And then, of course, you hear the transcripts, and you see the transcripts, and you hear the tapes. That's cool. But in Lady in the Dale, what they're doing is they're taking photographs of people's heads, and they're doing two-dimensional South Park style animation. And on all the reenactments, it's photographs of the people, but they're done. So, and that's the only way I can describe it, as South Park animation. It's that two-dimensional. It looks like they're cutouts.
Yeah.
And that's how they do
Terrence the and Phillip.
You know, and it is weird, but it fits. It fits the weirdness.
I remember hearing about this story. I don't have HBO Max, but I remember hearing this story and possibly the same documentary somewhere else.
But it probably is. But The Lady in the Dale, that's how they're selling it. They're selling it by doing the South Park style animation. And then they sneak in little zingers as well. Like at one time when they were talking about the grift that she was doing on how mm-hmm. she would take money from people, that was also animated, but it was animated in the style of Schoolhouse Rock.
Okay.
Because it was the '70s.
Yeah.
Because it was the '70s. So really a lot. Then they're doing interviews with people that lived through it. But when they do flashbacks to their past, it's all animated. It's all two-dimensional. And it's that South Park style. And
I've got to check it out now.
And
I've got to check
works.
It out.
It works beautifully. Brace yourself if you watch this, because it is a crazy story. The Lady in the Dale on HBO Max. Absolutely right. Nutty.
I think I'm going to save mine till next week, Craig. I'm going to do Disenchantment in season 3 from Netflix. Have you guys watched Disenchantment?
I have not seen it yet. No.
Okay.
I've seen some of the first season. I haven't finished it.
It's a continuation story. So it goes on. So thank you very much, T, for those stories. They are, I will vouch for Fear City. And you know, if the,
I'm glad you're digging it.
If The Lady in the Dale is the same story that I saw, absolutely. It opens your eyes to see how even in this day and age, we're still gullible. People can
come on. We've seen it all.
real quick, in a more conservative style of documentary, after you watch Lady in the Dale, if you think, well, we were in the '70s and we were gullible. Huh. I then dare you, after you watch that one, watch another one called The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley. That's also that's on standard HBO, but it's a fantastic documentary about this woman who kind of patterned herself off of Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. And she had this wonder machine that could run 100 blood tests off of a single little vial of blood. And it was the same grift that you see.
That's what I just said. That's
exactly. It's amazing. It's amazing how, because people they want to say, hey, I was on the ground level and look at where I am at now. And it's like, no, do that homework, baby. Do that homework. If it sounds too good to be true, you know. Yep. Anyway.
Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley is the documentary of the Theranos company.
Oh, you just said Theranos. Derp.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and
Theranos. I used to have a Theranos. You drink soup out of it.
No.
What's scary about Theranos is that if she did the snap with the gauntlet, you were screwed.
Purple
you
guy.
Were so screwed.
Yep.
But she would run 100 tests off that one snap. That's the thing.
But only 50 tests would be alive at the end.
Chuck Tomasi, nothing but net, baby. Nothing but net. That was brilliant.
switch.
Isolate that. Clip that. Hey, clip that and put that on. Put that on all the socials. God damn.
The media corner. Media corner time. Craig,
media corner time. Let's go.
Take the newspaper one, Craig.
All right. So I already had the link open. I'm opening it again. And over at Open Culture, they talk about the history of American newspapers has been digitized. There's 114 years of editor and publisher, the Bible of the newspaper industry. If you look into the history of an American newspaper, you can't get too deep before your inevitable encounter with the editor and publisher. Branded as the Bible of the newspaper industry, the trade magazine has for 120 years covered its subject from at every possible angle. Though newspapers have already been digitized in the United States for nearly 200 years before the magazine's founding, its run has been covial with an especially fascinating, even dramatic period in their history. It was the 20th century that the American newspaper was consolidated into the pillars of what looked like, for a time, like a mighty fourth estate in this century. They plunged into what editor and publishers owners Mike Blinder's terms such a crisis. Okay. Still, since purchasing the magazine last year, writes Internet Archives collection manager Marina Curtis.
No.
Lewis. Blinder and his wife, Robin, have been able to turn the operation around, doubling its revenues and tripling its audience. He also gave the Internet Archive permission to upload and make available all 114 years of editor and publisher issues free online.
114 years of a newspaper online.
That's pretty cool.
And how often? Yeah, weekly? Was this a daily? Well, how often was this published?
That's a good question. I'm not sure how often it was published. At least weekly, I'm sure.
All right.
Anyway. I'm kind of surprised the museum hasn't reached out to these people. And because I know the museum is going to be making a comeback very soon in D.C. For those of you who don't know, there's a wonderful homage to the First Amendment and to journalism. It was called the Newseum, and it was a history. It was a museum completely dedicated to journalism. And and it was pretty cool. On the they would have mobile exhibits that went around different places.
Right.
And I would imagine digitizing all of these newspapers. This is one of the things that I would imagine the museum would get behind, because one of the exhibits they had was when the 60th anniversary of the moon landing happened. They had at Dulles Airport a quick little gallery of the headlines that of newspapers around the world, not just across the country, but around the world, and how they said man has landed on the moon. And it was really amazing, because you'd go and you see all the headlines: Spain, France, England, United States. You get to Russia, it was below the fold.
That's funny.
Getting the last word, baby. Getting in the last word. It was below the fold, and they said, "Yeah, the headline that day in Soviet Union was something like."
Oh, by the way,
the Soviet government passes new law concerning vodka and distribution. It's good for communism. By the way, Americans land on moon. F them. Yeah. You know, I was like. Bottom of the poll, baby.
Potato prices soar again.
Again.
By the way, editor and publisher is a weekly journal. So it says, so if you scroll down one of the images of the cover, it says the only independent weekly journal of newspaper. Which is a verb, I guess.
We've got another one here, because some actors did some interesting stuff with one of our favorite movies, The Princess Bride. In the summer of 2020, Jason Reitman directed an at-home reenactment of The Princess Bride called Home Movie, The Princess Bride, featuring a ton of celebrities: Adam Sandler, Charlize Theron, Pedro Pascal, John Cho, and Roman Mars, just to name a few of the literal dozens. The thing played out in 9 parts across Quibi, which is why nobody saw it until some hero bootlegged the whole thing up on YouTube. Oh, poor Quibi. Rest in peace. And because Quibi is a thing that no longer exists, the whole video might actually stay up since there's nobody to make a copyright claim against it.
Wait a minute. Roku has bought all the Quibi stuff, so maybe you can see it on the Roku.
Also, this might be the only good thing to have come out of Quibi. Wow, this is hard.
Ow. Ow.
I mean, other than the laughs at how much money they lost and how quickly they went under. Keep going for the entire movie. We've got that on the show notes in episode 629 over at chuckchat.com/technorama.
I know what you're about to say.
I know. It was stuck on there. Dang, we do so many show note references on the other show.
Just remember, I got your back. I got your back, Chuck. Okay. I got your back.
He's got a real one.
Yeah.
Clear.
Beautiful. Beautiful. All right, that takes us to the end. We do have a question of the week to leave you with for this week. What common product has a feature you're not sure everyone is aware of? Oh, I got one for you.
Mm-hmm. Do you?
Okay, actually, if you go over to Life Hacks, you can find one in about 15 seconds. So I'm not going to tell you on this show. I'm going to save it for next week.
All right.
I got one as well.
Okay. What do you want to,
since you're not going to be here.
Fair enough. If I remember correctly, it is either, I believe it is, if you press the top button and the power button of your iPhone,
you'll take a screenshot.
I believe it's five times, in quick unison, and if it isn't the top button, it's the bottom button, your iPhone will actually place a, it'll go into a mode where there's a screen where you just have to touch one huge button. Your iPhone then becomes a sound alert, and it automatically dials 911 for you if you're in trouble.
Huh. Demonstrate. Go and show us now.
I'd rather not, because I did it one. I tried it. When I first heard about it.
Yeah.
And I went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And there was this giant button that said, I said, press here. And I just went, shh. It was like that moment in Mission Impossible where you dial in the code and it's like, are you ready to execute? You know, or press this button. You know you're gonna fire off the Jewish space laser. And I'm just like, oh crap, you know, I don't know what to do. And I was looking for the cancel button.
How do I get out of this?
Like, yeah, exactly. I had to get out of the mode because I was afraid I was gonna brick my phone. But it's basically a built-in.
Run outside and throw it in the street.
But it is an emergency feature on your phone that allows you the ability to do a personal alarm if you need it. And being the father of a daughter who is now a teenager and will soon be once the world calms down and we start returning back to normal. I want to make sure that my daughter is equipped to know these sort of things. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm sure I figure if the iPhone has it, then there's got to be.
I know Samsung did something like that. You hit the power button. Like I can't remember now, but I remember going, oh, you can set up emergency code and my watch. You can do that on a watch.
Yeah. Steve Cody just posted some comments into the chat. Thank you very much. He's got the link to the support.apple.com article. The whole thing. Thank you Fantastic. You for that. Good to know. Mine wasn't quite as profound. It was about Saran wrap. But we're going to save that for
Sorry,
next
guys.
Week.
Sorry about that.
Well,
okay then.
You're not on the next show.
That's good.
Saran wrap it is for the win. All right. We are going to be going on to record our Patreon show in just a few moments, but there will be no stream for that because it is just for our Patreon members. For that, I am going to thank T for joining us here.
Yes. My pleasure, guys. My pleasure. It was fun.
Thank you, Craig, for all the research on the stories. We did skip over a couple of stories, so go over to the show notes, chuckchat.com/technorama, and check out episode 629. We will get those to you, and you can watch the videos of Princess Bride, all that good stuff. Oh, did we forget anything?
I want to thank you, Chuck, for showing up.
Barely. Barely. It's been a rough day, but we'll get through this. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. And thank you, dear viewer, watcher, listener, for all of your attention and sticking with us again. Until next time, Craig, would you be so kind as to... You know what? T, give us the binary high five this time.
Yeah, you do it.
All right. 101.
Thanks, everybody.
I think my bell's... Hang on a minute. There's something wrong with my bell. I got to check.
Did you try turning it off and turning it on again?
No, I can't do that.